It's a pleasure to be here with you today in the late afternoon session. I'm very happy to be here among you, my fellow symbiotic selves. I hope that your microbiome is well functioning and your macrobiomes are well functioning as well. Because those two things, if we are healthy, and I hope most of the people in this room are healthy, those two things have a great deal to do with that fact. And that's sort of a starting point for our enterprise here with my colleagues to talk about how we might see a linkage between the realities of individual health, of population health or public health, and environmental health or ecological health, and to help ourselves understand the linkages among those realities by forging linkages among the discourses of bioethics or medical ethics, public health ethics, and environmental ethics. So that's kind of our task, and each of the four of us come at it in a different but I think complementary way. I have no relationships to disclose. That's false. I have no conflicts of interest to declare. I have nothing but relationships. At least that is the upshot of what I have to say. I might as well just stop now. So we're looking for a common ground among medicine, public health, and environmental studies, among the realities that those fields address. We're wondering if the concept of health itself is resilient and robust enough to provide a bridging notion among those fields. And we think that the discourse of ethics within those fields is important. And it is important for our society that those discourses not be conflicting or overly conflicting or logically incoherent with one another. I think we believe that society needs to have an integrated normative and moral discourse and moral imagination to somehow recognize the reality of the interdependency of these domains. And then be able to talk about it for governance and for social progress and for individual development. Talk about it in terms of its values and how those things might be best articulated. It's also necessary, I think, to be doing this kind of thing because I feel, in some ways, for different reasons, all three of these domains of ethical discourse are kind of orphan disciplines right now. And what I mean by that is that some of the basic epistemological and ontological assumptions that have underpinned bioethics, public health ethics, and environmental ethics are being called into question and shifting ground under our feet. So the coherence of our disciplines is in question, our ethics disciplines is in question because of this. I think that one of those shifting grounds has to do with the individualism that has underpinned so much of bioethics and in part so much of the ethical discourse of public health ethics also. And I can explain what I mean by that, but I think it cuts across the difference between aggregate net benefit ethic of utilitarianism on the one hand and an individual human rights ethic on the other. I think in their own ways they're both individualistic in ways that aren't really adequately attuned to the interdependencies of human life with nature and with ourselves and society. Environmental ethics, for its part, has been based upon what is now emerging as a rather limited and no longer adequate understanding of ecological science. So we have some interesting things going on. Before I proceed further, I just want to read a couple of sentences from an article that I came across. It's an interesting article, I think, by Lang and Rayner from the BMJ of 2012 called Ecological Public Health. And they write as follows, and this would address the question of sort of the orphan nature of public health ethics, perhaps, and the challenge of the field of public health. They write, "The connection between health and societal progress has been severely weakened in public policy of late. It is adrift when it ought to help shape a new direction. Public health ought to be articulating what a good society and a good economy are. Improving public health is at the heart of defining what is meant by progress. Indeed, part of the current crisis is that 20th century notions of progress underplayed how economic development distorted the relationship of humans to the planet, despite its being known that human health ultimately depends on the health of ecosystems." They go on. "Somehow modern public health had almost forgotten the primacy of the human-environmental interface." And then later on, when they identify different models of public health, what they call different models of public health, and ecological public health is the fifth of five models that they identify. And they say one of the many reasons to champion the ecological public health model is that centrally, ecological public health focuses on interactions, with one strand focusing on the biological world, and another strand centering on material issues such as links between industrial pollution, energy use, toxicity, impact human species, and nature, and so forth. Another reason they favor this ecological model of public health is that it articulates modern thinking about complexity and system dynamics, addressing, for example, questions of nonlinearity, variations in scale, feedback, and other emergent qualities of nature, biology, and human behavior. So there is an ontological or epistemological reason for the orphanness of our fields, in that we are all working out of traditions that don't really adequately account for the complexity of the realities we're talking about. Now, one of the things that's happening is what I refer to as an ecological turn in all of these three fields of ethics. And in bioethics, it's a movement away from this individualism of the concept, the central concept of autonomy, as Lisa has pointed out. In public health ethics, it comes out of an appreciation of the importance of the social determinants of health, not simply the biomedical determinants of health, and not simply the individual sort of behavioral determinants of health, but social institutional determinants of health, which shape behavior, limit options, and make the achievement of population health one and the same as the achievement of, frankly, institutional reform and the redistribution of power and wealth in a social structure. Without that kind of reinvigoration of community and restructuring of options and resources and capabilities, it's unlikely that we will make very much more progress in advancing population health as we understand it in the developing, in the developed world, in the G20 at any rate. I'm going to skip over this slide. This is the point I wanted to make here is as an example of a reconceptualization in the field of public health is an interesting reconceptualization, I think, the notion of environmental health. So the notion of environmental health in medicine and public health has traditionally seen the environment as a sort of outside thing that's a source of risk and harm, the things, the toxins and so forth that undermine human health, the human biological functioning. And of course that's true, and the protecting human beings against those kinds of environmental risk factors and threats remains an extremely important enterprise. Nonetheless, in an era of climate change, in an era of that we're entering in the 21st century, we have to think about the environment and environmental health in much more global and systemic and ecosystemic terms. So environmental health challenges are now of a different nature, a different character. It's one thing to worry about the pollution of rivers in a given locale and clean water supply. It's another thing to understand that the snowpack on the Himalayan plateau is so diminished that the river flow of massive river systems that that area supplies will be disrupted in ways that will threaten access to fresh water supplies for probably over a billion people in the Indian subcontinent and in Asia. That's an environmental health problem, but of a different sort, I suggest. We need to be able to get our minds around that kind of problem. Now, I want to hazard a thought about how we can begin to devise a vocabulary that would, in fact, bridge these three domains. And I think myself that there are two key notions, and I just want to very briefly introduce these thoughts to you for whatever they're worth and hope that we can have some discussion. I think that a key to a bridged ecological turn in bioethics, public health ethics, and environmental ethics may come out of crucial notions of right or just recognition and right or just relationship. Right recognition, I mean to be a concept of membership, a concept of moral considerability, a concept of belonging to a community of beings, each of whom is morally considerable. And this membership is, this place of membership is constituted by a participatory voice and an equality of mutual respect and concern for all of the members, all of the beings who have moral considerability. I think it's pretty obvious how this applies to bioethics and public health ethics. I think it's actually quite useful for environmental ethics as well, because it gives us one way of talking about some of the challenges we face in environmental and ecological governance, which is precisely how to develop representational mechanisms that give voice to those species who do not have voice in the human sense of the term. How do we bring them into membership and moral considerability? I think in almost all versions of environmental ethics suggest that that is an ethical requirement that we do so. The question is, how do we do it? So that's right. That's what I mean by membership and right recognition. Right relationship is about mutuality. And the concept of mutuality I think of as being comprised of a number of elements, one of which I would call solidarity, but another of which I'd call care, another of which I'd call reciprocity, another of which I'd call empathy, and so forth. These are the kinds of notions that I'm trying to get at with the notion of right relationship and mutuality. It's interdependency. It's the recognition of the ethical implications of interdependency. And to be in a community with mutuality is to have the kind of perception on the part of all members of the interdependency and the mutual obligations that we have, which flow out of the membership standing and the moral considerability of each and all. So with notions like this, I think we might be able to begin to build a discourse that could bridge, not unify necessarily, but bridge bioethics, public health ethics, and environmental ethics. At least that is my hope and sort of my own current research program. Here are some of the implications that I think would flow from this. Obviously, there are other terminologies that can be used. I think that, as I jumped over a slide, I think the concept of liberty and the concept of justice is being reconsidered and reinterpreted and reconceptualized by this relational turn, this ecological turn, and that's extremely significant. Here I would point to the feminist theorists in bioethics who are developing notions of relational autonomy And I would point to the capability theories of justice developed by Amartya Sen, Martha Nussbaum, Jennifer Ruger, and others, who are attempting to sort of change the conversation away from the utilitarian, deontological, debate between justice as fairness and justice as aggregate net benefit. This is about a picture of individuals who need to have socially empowered capabilities in order to do basic human functionings, in order to realize basic human goods in their lives. It's a developmental conception, and it's a pluralistic conception. There's not one narrow list of goods that you have to do in order to be a flourishing human being. There are many. But within those, you must be able to live in an environment that enables and empowers your capacities to realize and pursue your own flourishing, your own elements of flourishing as you best can. And if you don't live in such a place, then your capacities are going to be stunted by injustice, discrimination, exclusion, voicelessness, and so on. That is a theory of justice that has emerged. It's also a theory of liberty, if you want. I think it's very promising. So drawing upon resources like that, I'm hoping that we can find an invigorated language to bridge these three domains. We promised to leave with a slide of questions. I just put those up for your consideration, basically. And I want to engage with Jonathan's narrative. I do believe that we can't divorce how we understand our relationships and our responsibilities toward the non-human world with our relationships and our responsibilities to others. If we don't solve both of those problems of justice simultaneously, we're not going to solve either one of them, I think. Climate change won't let us solve the one, and I don't think we can conceptually be that schizophrenic about it, frankly, anymore. Therefore, we have to talk about our responsibilities toward nature or the natural world or ecosystems and the biotic and ecological context. We have to talk about that really in the same breath as we talk about human social justice and disparities and inequalities. We can't make them the enemy of each other. That's the framing that individuals who have been really obstacles to improving our public policies in these regards, that's the framing they have used to divide and conquer. We mustn't accept that framing. Thank you.